You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7, and this is Community In Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me State Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Representative Juergens, it's good to have you back again.
Always great to be back, Mike. Boy, how about that Super Bowl, huh? your listeners know that we record this on Friday, so as of the recording, we don't know how the Super Bowl went. So I'm sure it was a very entertaining game.
I'm sure the team with the most points won.
Yes.
In your area. the last week up at the state capitol has been one of kind of general housekeeping for legislation and committees and things like that. Mm-hmm. So as far as getting bills introduced in committee and through the system, hasn't quite hit full swing yet, but there are still other aspects of state government that go on behind the scenes. I talked with Senator Bingham earlier, and she was talking about some routine kind of bills that still need some necessary attention. You had a press release out late last week talking about energy assistance and relief. Let's discuss that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the very bitter cold that finally hit us. We had a pretty mild January, to be honest, but mm-hmm. Knowing that the bitter cold was coming, the sub-zero weather, thought it was a good idea, a good time to remind people of a program called the Low Income Energy Assistance Program. And hopefully you put a link on your website, KDWA's website, to direct people to the website where they can get more information. But mm-hmm. It's anybody that's having trouble. We know that COVID has really hit some families very hard financially.
Right.
And we don't want people to be, you know, weighing the option of should we pay our heating bill or can we buy groceries this week. So I encourage anybody that needs help, needs assistance paying for their heating bills, to go to the website and fill out. It's a very quick and easy application process. It's through the Scott Carver Dakota County Community Action is who, for Dakota County residents, that's who you would go through. It's a state program. And just as an example, a family of four that earns $54,000 a year or less, and they base it on a 3-month rolling average, but, mm-hmm. but sure. annualized about $54,000 for a family of four, and you would qualify for some assistance. It might be, you know, a few hundred bucks, or on average, I think it's about $500, but that could really help.
Does that work in conjunction with the cold weather rule that we have here in Minnesota?
Yeah, they can't get it shut off anyway, but you want to be able to help them, you know, financially to pay their bills. And there's some other aspects of that. There's some education that can go along with that. So mm-hmm. I just encourage people that might be in that situation that there's help out there, and encouraging them to take a look at it.
Yes. Then the link for that website will be posted on the news page of KDWA.com with a little bit of an explanation of what's going on there. The applications can be filled out how late into the year?
May 31st. Okay. They go until that until the end of May, but I would encourage people, if you're in that situation, to get the application process started soon.
Right, you want to stay as current or as close to current as you can on your bills. COVID's kind of really done a number on finances everywhere. We're also talking about some legislation that I believe was suggested by the governor. Is that correct? A safe account fund, about $35 million for law enforcement.
Yes. And not surprisingly, Mike, there's a little controversy around this. But,
okay.
There is a bill that's going through the House right now. It's in the Public Safety Commission. I'm not on that committee, but I did follow it a little bit. And the governor is requesting $35 million for a fund. It's called the SAFE Fund. And it would be to help reimburse law enforcement in the event of civil unrest or protest. The governor would like to fast track this. We're about a month out from the trial starting for former officers Chauvin and the others. And there is an expectation that regardless of the outcome, there could be some civil unrest and protests as a result of that. And so the governor's looking at this fund. It's, we've funded law enforcement throughout COVID, or rather throughout the civil unrest in different ways. And I believe that the governor also applied to use the disaster assistance contingency account funding a couple of months ago. And that isn't really what that fund was set up for. So he's looking to set this up. And, you know, on one hand, it's really tough because you want to support law enforcement.
Right.
And, but in a way, this would also almost reward the city of Minneapolis, who's down 200 police officers right now.
And they're that's not fully mostly funding. Due to their own in-house actions.
A lot of different reasons. They're defunding police, or the police officers that have left or gone on medical leave for different reasons and not refilling those positions. And even the Minneapolis police chief has asked the council for more officers.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, Minneapolis is looking at ways to redo their police department and defund aspects of their police department. And yet now they are expecting that they're going to be short-staffed and they want others to help. So that's one side of it where you really want to be conscious of that. And I hear from my colleagues around the state that say, well, now, wait a second. We don't think that we should have to help pay for Minneapolis because they haven't fully funded their police force.
Right.
On the other hand, the Dakota County Sheriff's Department, the Washington County Sheriff's Department, the Hastings Police Department, Cottage Grove Police Department, all stepped up and helped in some way during the protests last summer.
They did, yes.
And didn't receive a dime. And so the local citizens are already funding it to some extent.
Kind of in a roundabout way.
Because we're paying for those law enforcement agencies. Yeah. So I can see both sides of it. I think that, as this bill goes through committee, I'm hearing that there are some proposed amendments that might be problematic, but time will tell what the final bill looks like. So that's something that people will, it's been on the news. People can kind of keep an eye on that. But as I said, there's some controversy around it, just for the reasons that I've stated. But on the other hand, if something does break out and some of our local law enforcement gets sent to different areas of the metro area to help out, I would like if this fund isn't the answer, then what is? Because I think that our officers, our departments, do need to get reimbursed some way, somehow.
Right.
Otherwise, we are the local taxpayers. We're the ones that are paying for it.
Right. And when you look at it all the way around, we still are anyway. Either we paying them local through our own taxes to our own governments or through that fund, which is also a taxpayer-based kind of a thing.
A lot of people feel that if the officers get sent to Minneapolis, then it's Minneapolis that should be paying for it.
Right, yeah. You can't always prepare for a George Floyd type of demonstration, though. Even if that police department, I believe, were fully funded and ready to go, they still would have been.
They still needed some outside sources, whether it's the state patrol or and a lot of conservation officers. They're mm-hmm. they're employed by the state, and so during whether it was protecting the Capitol or over in Minneapolis or different parts of St. Paul, there were actual game wardens that were walking the line with some of the other police officers because mm-hmm. they're trained law enforcement officers.
Sure. Yeah,
and so they were part of this as well, but. There's no, one of the sheriffs that I talked to in the state said, we didn't get reimbursed for anything that we did. But when we were helping out other sheriff's departments, but that's sort of the agreement that if we need help, they're going to come and help us too.
Right.
So that's a big part of it. I know that, former Officer Chauvin, his home was in Oakdale, which obviously is Washington County. And there were big demonstrations there the Washington County deputies were on mandatory 12-hour shifts for a while, and there were sheriff's departments in the teens. It might have been, 13, 14 different departments that helped out in one way or another, and I don't think any of them got reimbursed. I know that the agencies that I talked to had not seen any kind of money come back, but to some extent, like I said, they know that they help each other out because if they're the ones that need help, that they're going to get that back to them. Right. And one of the other expenses, too, like, for example, in Cottage Grove, They had increased overtime. They had people working additional shifts just to, and in Hastings as well, just in case something happened, just in case yes, something moved right. out to the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And so they had increased costs at that time just to be prepared in case the, you know, some of the demonstrations moved out to the suburbs. And there were some things that did go on in Dakota County that I'm aware of in Washington County that some were on the news, some weren't. But thankfully, nothing to the extent that we saw in Minneapolis came to Hastings or to Cottage Grove. But they were still on duty to prepare for it.
And ideally, then, what would that legislation look like from your perspective? You say it's controversy. You see,
it would go through, Department of Public Safety. So it would give a lot of leeway to the commissioner of Department of Public Safety, which right now is Commissioner Harrington, to be able to the applicants would be able to apply for their expenses or their equipment if equipment gets damaged as a result. They can apply to the Department of Public Safety, and then the DPS would dole that money out. And one of the concerns that I have with it is, as it's written right now, and again, the language can always change, is that there is no reporting back to the legislature on who received the funds or how it was used. And, and I think that there
that
should
seems
be
kind
some
of
over,
odd.
Yeah, there should be some oversight there.
Yeah.
That somebody reports back, whether it's DPS or another department that would report back to the legislature at the end of the year and say, here's how much we used and here's who received it and why they received it. Hopefully that can get fixed and added during the committee process. But I'm expecting that to move pretty quickly just because the trial for the officers, our former officers, is coming up soon, and so they want to get that in place.
All right. And is it just the one committee it has to go through that you're aware of, or what is its trail at this point?
You know, that I'm not sure. I don't know where what stops. It could go right straight to the general register, which means to the House floor.
Sure.
It might have a stop in Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. So it's hard. I'm not sure where that path is today.
Okay.
As of when we're recording this, it was in Public Safety.
Excellent. Moving on, there is one other topic that we're going to be bringing up today that you expressed interest in explaining a little bit, and that's expanding the medical marijuana availability, is what I'll call it, from beyond just the CBDs and the oils to leaf products themselves. Tell me about that a little bit.
So Minnesota has approved medical marijuana use or medical cannabis use several years ago, and there are two manufacturing plants in the state of Minnesota. One is Leafline Labs in Cottage Grove.
Right.
And I've toured it before. I've seen the operation, and the way the law was written, Minnesota is you can own the cannabis product can only be an oil or a spray or drops that you put under your tongue or something like that, or capsules. They have a creams and I think a vaporizer type product.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are very expensive to process, and that raises the cost of the medical cannabis product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, insurance doesn't pay for that. So a lot of what I've heard from different people is that a lot of people, they get the prescription for medical cannabis. They maybe get a couple of doses from one of the dispensaries around the state. And because of the cost, they just aren't able to continue doing that, and they end up just going on the black market. You know, their nephew knows a guy that sells weed or something like that, and so they get it that way and self-medicate. And so what this would do, if we could expand the law to include the leaf product, then people could obtain this legally with a prescription without having to go to the black market. It would make the processing so much more cost efficient for Leafline Labs and Minnesota Medical Processing, or Minnesota Medical Solutions, which is the other plant in the state. I actually signed on to this as a co-author. I think that it would make sense. To be honest, I haven't even talked to Leafline Labs about this yet. I did just about the whole concept a year or two ago, but not about this bill.
Sure.
But I have heard from others from within the industry, and they brought this to my attention. And so I said, yeah, I'll sign on to that, because I think it makes sense from what I know about the challenges that they're facing.
Right. And I know just generally the thought then is, how far is it a leap from the leaf products for medical marijuana to just recreational use? And I know a lot of people are kind of wary of that.
They are.
And how do you build in safeguards, or how do you address that?
Yep. And you know, that's a whole other topic we can we can talk about someday. And my position on that has been consistent for, you know, several years since I got into office. And from a recreational standpoint, I really am not too concerned with what people do in the privacy of their home, but I do get concerned when they get behind the wheel of a car.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not the same. Testing for driving under the influence of marijuana is not the same as it is for alcohol, where you have a 0.08 blood alcohol content. There's different. It just doesn't process. Your body doesn't process the THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, the same way. Now, I've done a lot of ride-alongs with law enforcement, and they have specially trained officers, DREs, or drug recognition experts, that will come to the scene if, you know, so if an officer pulls somebody over and they're suspected of being under the influence of any drug, they'll call for a DRE or drug recognition expert to come and administer tests, and they can tell. I mean, they know within, you know, a minute of what the status is, but proving that in court is a little different story.
Yes.
And so, I'm still looking to get some more, something a little more solid on the testing of driving under the influence before I'm fully sold on that. But, you know, again, what people do in their homes, it doesn't really concern me too much.
Sure.
And I know with a lot that's going on in police departments, law enforcement agencies, of, you know, whether it's state or rather county or city, a lot of times they're kind of looking the other way on these because they just have other things to be concerned with. But
and I've
if
also,
somebody's flaunting it, they're going to get written up, get a ticket for it.
Sure. And I also understand that at the federal level, they're looking at actually removing marijuana from the Schedule One.
That's what needs to be done. That's another big issue that we could get into sometime. But it needs to be because the Schedule One classification of a drug says that it has no medical properties or no medical benefits. And I think we know that we've talked about it, that it does. So that's a federal issue. So people need to contact their federal delegation for that one.
Right. You're listening to Community In-Depth. I have State Representative Tony Juergens with me, and we're just about out of time. At this point, sir, what I'd like to do is once again give you the opportunity to provide contact information if your constituents have questions, concerns, or maybe even suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a call at 651-296-3135 or send an email to rep.tony.juergens@house.mn. And let me know the topics that we're talking about today. If you have an opinion on those, please let me know.
All right. I would like to thank you, Representative Juergens, for coming in today.
Thank you very much. It's always good to be back, and the weeks are just flying by.
They are.
Before you know it, we're going to be at the very end of session, aren't we?
And it'll be springtime. Yes. I'm looking forward to that. You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7.